Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Blake Wheeler, aging poorly. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and Geno Fracas Award winner, Vaughn Mitchell. Congrats, buddy.
Thanks very much. I haven't won the award yet. I'm the conference nominee for the award, and
I can't even get that right.
It's okay, man. The Jets aren't getting things right. I mean, it was a very kind introduction, and I appreciate it. I thought you would have went something with like, this is my co-host Vaughn Mitchell, who, like Blake Wheeler, has been completely absent for the past 2 weeks.
I just say that behind your back, buddy. I don't actually confront my feelings.
Mike has been very kind and patient, and football has been taking up a lot of time in recent weeks, and that has delayed our getting back together and having a podcast. So I thank him for his patience and indulgence in my other my other hobby that doesn't pay any money, that takes up all of my time.
I was going to say, what's the prize? Is it like $1 million? But apparently not.
Well, we're chipping away at it. I got an email from the Face Off Hockey Network, and apparently I'm owed $2.04 from some type of royalty scheme they've got going. And all I know is I get an email for $2.04 and you buy a new house. So, I mean, there's a lot of this.
You should have read the fine print, Vaughn. You should have read the fine print. Get a better lawyer.
You're fired, Mike.
Speaking of which, super quick, and we didn't talk about this beforehand, but one of our favorite listeners, it's not Mike and it's not Clark, but Mike Clark, congratulations to him. He was appointed a judge of the Provincial Court of Manitoba. So Mike and I were chatting at one of these many parent hockey functions, and he told me the good news. So congratulations to him. Well deserved.
Yeah, congratulations. I played hockey with Mike, adult hockey, and we already have a nickname for him as a judge. It's Judge Red, as in Judge Dredd, Judge Red. Anyways, we thought it was tremendously funny and apt, as he is a ginger, but he will do outstanding work on the bench and is well deserving of that. And if I could quickly throw a shout out, I recently connected with an old player I coached. His name's Matt Singer. He lives in Ottawa and apparently listens to our podcast, and gave me a whole rundown of what he likes and all that. When he was in town, we were recruiting his nephew, and we had flown his nephew in for a recruiting visit, and he came along with him. And I was quite surprised to hear that we've reached all the way to the nation's capital. So Matt, if you're listening, thanks for listening, and send it around to any Jets fans that happen to be in Ottawa.
Very cool. Well, without further ado, should we do some check-in time?
Absolutely.
I'm checking in. He's checking in. I'm checking in.
Well, it's been a bit. I'll just go real quick. Not that anybody needs. Everybody's got an internet connection, but we're 9-6-4. 0-3-1 in the last four puts us third in the Central. We were really running hot there for a little while, and we've hit obviously a bit of a speed bump, and you and I have been lamenting privately through text and other forums, Twitter mostly. We'll get into it, but we've just our inability to score. I think we've got four goals in the last four games, and our power play is an abysmal 1-for-20, I think, in our last 20. And special teams in general is just atrocious.
Yes.
But again, I know that it's very easy, and I'm guilty of it, and you are to a lesser extent, to take small sample sizes and overreact. That's sort of my MO. And so I'm trying to be uncharacteristically optimistic through this nadir, but the same problems seem to be resurfacing, in that we're only getting production from one or two or three forwards. We're getting saved, even though we're losing. We should be losing by more in terms of great goaltending, and our once sort of what I thought bolstered D lineup has, there's some holes in the armor. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, what are your thoughts over the past couple of weeks?
Well, our last podcast was November 1st. Since then we've had 11 games. Our record is 5-4-2 in those games. We started pretty hot. We won 5 of the first 7, including a shutout loss to St. Louis, in which I thought we played pretty well. So the only stinker within that stretch was a 2-0 loss to the Islanders. But as you mentioned, the last 4 have not been great. I thought we were okay at Edmonton in a 2-1 shootout loss. Vancouver wasn't great. Pittsburgh was a great first period. In Columbus, there was just a bucket of yuck. And I don't know what's happened. The Jets seem to just break. And it's tough. I mean, when I want to come onto this podcast, I want to say new and interesting things, right? You don't want to harp on the same things time and time and time again. And yet here we are. You know, we could easily devolve into criticism of the coach and jumping on the dead body of Blake Wheeler. I mean, there's no need for the two of those things. I'm sure we'll touch on them, but I don't know what to say. I do think that we had a very nice thing going with 3 guys who hadn't played together. You know, Connor, Dubois, and Svechnikov. And then we have this nice thing, and because we're Winnipeg,
we can't remember have nice
very
things.
Quickly, we can have nice things. And, you know, so maybe we'll move into the specifics as we go forward, but I do think there's a lot of things, especially 5-on-5, that are pretty darn decent. I do think that the Jets haven't been great at generating good chances.
Right.
Yep. I think they're almost, you know me, I love my conspiracies. They're almost gaming the system in the sense they're throwing a lot more pucks to the net, unlike they have in the past, where they have been more stingy in trying to create grade A chances. And that's elevated their shot totals. And therefore, their stats look better than they really are. Because I agree, you know, at the one, we're not creating those great chances. And, you know, I think in terms of, you know, getting back into this, it just occurred to me, hey, Vaughn, why don't you look up high danger chances? That stuff exists. Yeah, okay.
We don't need analysis on this thing.
Why would I need to prep? Anyways, I do get the sense that our opponents are creating more good, high-grade chances than we are. Certainly in the last 4 games, our offense has dried up, and it's frustrating. And at the back end, there's still some challenges back there. So I think we're kind of on the same page there. How do we get out of it? I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I was curious because I'm the same as you. I thought, why would we take Svechnikov, Connor, and PLD, a line that was clearly working, clearly clicking, and then play a little Russian egg doll and move everyone around? And the underlying stats they're quite similar with Wheeler on and Wheeler off. The high scoring chances for those guys is about 17-9 when they're on.
Okay.
And 42-27 just for scoring chances in general. And their shot share and expected goals are pretty similar. They're lower. Everything's a little lower and a little worse.
With Wheeler,
Yeah, with Wheeler on the line. But not sort of markedly different. We were just obviously scoring more. The results were different. But the sort of underlying metrics that we track and sort of rely on heavily were somewhat the same, but it got me thinking. I'm really hoping when Stastny gets back that we go back to the, because I don't really care about what Wheeler's doing, and Scheifele is getting more and more frustrating for me. Yeah, and so I put him with Lowry, put those 3 together. Let's get 3 lines rolling again. And for whatever reason, I think Ehlers, Stastny, and Kopp play well together, because you alluded to it on last podcast. Ehlers is a tough guy to play with. He's unorthodox. His passing is somewhat a bit erratic. And I think you need sort of two-way guys to counterbalance the sort of ebbs and flows of his play. And then obviously you put 71 back with Connor and PLD. I would love for that to happen. We'll see what happens. But I think if we do, that's a really good start. And again, I agree with you that our 5-on-5 numbers are actually a lot better than they have been over the last 2-3 years. Like
exactly.
You mentioned it. We don't want to be broken records, but for the past year and a half, we've been saying we're a good team, but we are a lucky team, if for lack of a better word, right? We allow a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. We get really good goaltending, and we have really elite scores. And so our underlying metrics are not very good most of the time. We've corrected that to a certain extent. We are a good, you know, I was looking at it today. We're in the top 10 in all the Corsi, Fenwick, expected mm-hmm. goals, all the sort of underlining analytics that sort of indicate whether or not you're controlling play, which is great, but now we can't kill penalties and we can't score on the power play. So we just can't put everything together at once.
Yeah, I did a little pre-podcast research into the power play and penalty kill. And, you know, looking at the penalty kill, it is 31st in the league, which is
good?
Not good, obviously. Oh, you actually want to be the other end of the scale on that one, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I looked at it in a different way, just goals for and against. We've scored only 10 power play goals, okay? So that's 23rd in the league. Again, not good, okay? But on the penalty kill, we've given up 18. So our penalty kill percentage is abysmal. But we haven't
65%.
Taken a ton. Yeah, but we haven't taken as many penalties as other teams. So
fair.
The percentage kind of exaggerates. Well, it is bad, and perhaps we're lucky that we're not taking more penalties. But our plus minus power play to penalty kill is -8. Okay, which is again not good, and probably costs you, you know, at least two games. You know.
Yeah, there's been a few games. Yeah.
And then you take a look at a team that's really rolling, like Edmonton, who scored 23 power play goals and has only given up, let's quickly find them here, 8, you know,
that's better.
Power play goals against. So that's plus 15. So, you know, we're going to have to swing that in plus territory eventually if we want to be a playoff team. You know, Edmonton's up near the top, and they're really making hay when they have, like, how can you say they're not a well-coached team? You know, as we've discussed on previous podcasts, the most coached part of the game is penalty kill and power play.
Absolutely.
You know, so when we are failing miserably in both of those elements, where do you look? Where do you look? It's about deployment. It's about tactics. You know, it's about zone entries. And, you know, funny, one of the things I've noticed this year is we seem to be better on the initial faceoff after once we get a power play. So we are gaining possession in the attacking zone seemingly more often, more because we used to always lose that faceoff.
Yeah, we did.
They'd rim it around, and we almost like we wanted to start off on the rush, but we were no good at it. So I don't know what was happening there. But, I mean, that's a huge, huge problem, I think, that needs correction because, as you allude to, we are doing well 5-on-5. And where we're really losing ground is on special teams, right?
Yeah.
So we need to really turn those things around and then complement that and continue to do well 5-on-5. And then we're going to stay ahead of the pack, right? But what's really holding us back, and I think that has hurt us especially recently, has been our lack of production, both on the power play and on the penalty kill. I shouldn't say that. The penalty kill has been extremely consistent, although consistently bad.
Terrible.
We haven't had, it's inconsistent. We've had these great stretches. No, it's been, I don't recall, there may have been one or two stretches where we went a few games without giving up a power play goal, but, you know, it stinks.
It does. And again, I'm not an X's and O's guy. Like, I can't sit here and profess that I have the perfect penalty kill format and system mapped out. I do know enough, though, that the system that we've used now and that we've been using for years, this very lackadaisical and sort of collapsing
passive.
System.
It's passive.
It's super passive. And, you know, Pittsburgh leads the league in penalty kill percentage.
That's all, folks.
And you see it. They're very aggressive. They forecheck.
Yeah.
They don't let you get established. And you see it whenever we're playing a team that's got an aggressive penalty kill, we have a really hard time setting
exactly.
up. And we typically don't have much success in those scenarios. And we're so focused on cutting off the middle pass, like the cross pass between the wings, because that was and is our bread and butter and has been for a while. we're so uber focused on that everybody collapses down in the middle. And then as soon as there's a breakdown, everybody's watching the puck, everybody's shifting over. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I can see it. You can see it two passes away where like, oh, no, he's going to pass it to the point. They're going to swing it around, get a really good shot, and we're going to all collapse. And then we're going to leave a guy at the back of the doorstep. I'm not a hockey coach, but it seems pretty evident to me that there has to be a better way. And putting Connor on there or taking Nash off, fine. That's literally duct taping things. It's like, no, you need to fundamentally change how we're doing it. And why I love Adam Lowry is because he seems to go rogue. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a little more aggressive, and he's our best penalty killer by far. Like, he'll chase or he'll finalize a puck battle, even if it takes him out of the sort of quote-unquote diamond system that we play, because he knows, you know what wins? Me getting the puck and firing it down the ice. Again, all very simplistic analysis, but it's so frustrating time after time after time watching them do the same thing and then having the same result. I can't understand it. I know we said we weren't going to do the Some People Call Me Maurice segment, but I just did.
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily talking about Maurice. It's everything's linked to the coach eventually. And speaking of coaches, I happen to be a coach.
There
and
you go.
I can tell you the three main constraints in sports is time, space, and talent, right? So you have a situation in where the other team puts their best talent on the ice, and you're allowing them both space and time.
That's
the Jets' approach, right? We will retreat and allow you to gain the line easily. And then we will give you space because we're not going... Like, we're giving their best talent time and space to do things in the attacking zone. To me, that doesn't add up. That's an equation that should come out in the negative whenever you add it up, right? Because eventually, their talent, given both time and space, will be able to make plays. And back to your point about being aggressive, you know, that's what you need to do. Reduce their time and space. Yeah, there'll be a time where if you're pressing, you know, they're going to find, you know, it's going to be a fluky pass. It'll go through someone's legs or something like that. Yes, right? But it's going to be, you're putting the pressure on them to make extraordinary plays in extraordinarily tight time and space situations. That's what you want to do. That's what my game is all about. Football is about dealing with those factors.
Mm-hmm.
And the teams that win deal with those factors the best. Rarely do teams, like we talk about, imagine we're playing prevent defense in the red zone. That's essentially what
Thank
we're
you.
Doing.
There you go. That's a gooder.
You know, and so we shouldn't be surprised that this continues not to work. And, you know, the one guy, as you mentioned, who does it a little bit differently and has more success out there than others is Adam Lowry, because he tends to pressure the puck. He's got a good reach. He's aggressive. He can move well in short spaces. So that, again, puts pressure on the attacking team to make plays. And they don't against him. But it is very frustrating. They've held on to this system as if it were, you know, an award-winning system.
You know what I mean? it's like Scientology. They just can't shake it. Like, I have a theory, and I know you like theories. This is less conspiracy and just generally a theory. But we play and have played, again, probably a small sample size, but we play well against Edmonton now for some reason. And we seem to have their number to a certain extent. Again, last game we played, we actually recorded a loss. But what I've noticed in the play is that we're hypersensitive. We've been burned by McDavid and Draisaitl so many times that, and rightfully so, 5-on-5, whoever's against that line or lines, you can see it. You can see, like, Connor or Scheifele, they have a defensive mind and presence, and they close the space and they close the gaps. And, you know, obviously Connor McDavid's Connor McDavid, so he's going to do his thing, and you're never going to stop him completely. But then we don't shift that philosophy to any other part of our game, like on the penalty kill or, you know, even the power play. We're so lackadaisical. I would love, and I looked, I don't know what the stat is, the number of two-on-ones or high danger scoring chances that we give up on our power play, but I guarantee that we lead the league in that category. I couldn't find it. I will try and find it. But it's just, we have such a lack of attention to detail on some of these things. And to me, it's more just, easy fix. Everyone get a heightened sense of awareness. Close some gaps. PK or not, I just see that all the time. And it's our, you know, unfortunately, they've been playing really well, but it's our top-end guys. Like, Scheife's guilty of this. Ehlers is guilty of this. Connor's guilty of it. It's just those little details that seem to float in and out of the game. Like the Pittsburgh game that you referenced, I think that was it. Like, we crushed them in the first period.
Crushed them.
And then we just sucked. Like, how does that happen? We just flat out sucked for the next two. I mean, the second period wasn't bad. I just, to me, that's a coaching thing too, where it's like at some point the focus is lost and there's a certain aspect of coaching that I think you need to put the train back on the tracks.
Yeah, you know, I'm sympathetic to the human side of this in the sense that I think it's really hard for anyone, even elite athletes, to be super focused every shift, every night for you know, 6 to 8 months or whatever the case may be. It's easy to get laser focused when Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl come into town. There is no pregame speeches required there. Everyone is Fair. Up and ready to go. You know, it's the Tuesday night in November against Pittsburgh or whatever. I mean, that's a bad example because Sidney Crosby's in town. But, you know, maybe it's going into Vancouver after, you know, a pretty good game in Edmonton where you lost in a shutout. Vancouver sucks. They're in disarray. They're about to fire their general manager. You know, they're screaming at their coach. All these different things that we got this one, guys. Well, they're professionals, too. I've always thought that the enemy in hockey is volume. You just do so much of everything that you start to lose perspective on how important the little things are and how, you know, non-important a particular shift is, right? So they play 82 games. They get, I don't know, let's say 20 shifts a night. So what is that? 1,600 shifts in a season. You know, how important is that one shift? Well, you know, that's a tough attitude to take. Every shift is important. People like you and I hang on every shift, you know, and we get like, what were they doing out there kind of thing if they just skate around for 45 seconds and don't do anything interesting.
Yeah.
So I do think volume's the enemy, and I think that teams can spiral down and they can spiral up. And I think it's back to your point. It's the coach's job to manage that. And we're back to talking about the coach, but you know, we've had a number of these extended periods where the Jets spiral down and they can't get out of it. I think there was a couple at the end of last season. One right now where we haven't played very well. We played very well in that first period against Pittsburgh and then just allowed them to take the game away from us. We look exhausted in that game for some reason, even though it was 3 days, I think, that was a Monday, and we had played the Friday night against Vancouver. So there was plenty of time to recover. And then we looked pretty listless against Columbus as well. We looked disinterested. And that's a hard thing to say because I would never accuse any of the Jets of not trying or being truly disinterested.
No, yeah. No, that's fair.
But I'm saying they appeared disinterested. They didn't have that same sense of urgency, and I don't know what it is. And just very quickly on your point about the power play, the Jets' power play was set up, you know, to service Patrick Laine for the most part. And yeah, he had the big clap bomb that really made that tick, and it opened other things up for other people. And when Laine was here, Wheeler was doing an excellent job of creating from the low post area.
Right, yeah.
Right? And he doesn't seem to have that now. Now, I don't know, you know, Connor can do the one-timer a little bit. Scheifele, I love you, man. How are the goats, by the way? Doesn't have that same one-timer stationary on the power play. He had a beautiful one-timer against LA to win in overtime. Holy crap, that was beautiful.
Yeah, that was really nice.
But I don't recall a ton of, I recall a lot of opportunity and not a lot of success, even getting good wood on the puck on the power play. So he's not that guy, I think, to naturally take over the position where Laine set up. And I don't even think that Kyle Connor does it well enough, or they're not putting it on his back foot well enough, or whatever the case may be. He's not getting the passes in the right place. It looks fundamentally different. It's very stationary.
No.
It's very static. It doesn't challenge the defense at all. They don't move the puck fast enough.
No,
right?
it's the same thing.
The thing is, they move the puck slowly, then the PK adjusts. and they're all in the right place. And then they move it somewhere else, and then the PK adjusts, and they're all in the right place. You have to move it around quickly, multiple times. Even if it's back and forth to the same guy, some guy's going to trip on his shoelace or whatever. You know what I mean? He's going to be going left, right, and then make a mistake, and now he's out of position and maybe a cross-seam pass. That puck has got to move way faster than it is when they have established possession in the attacking zone. I just think there are easily rectifiable things that they're not doing right now, but they haven't been doing them. Like, the fix has been right in front of them for some time.
Yeah, and it's
I don't know what they're waiting for in order to implement them.
Yeah, and if we keep misusing Riley Nash on the power play, it's very frustrating because he is a dynamo out there. And the fact that we're wasting his talents by him doing nothing like he does for the rest of the part of the game is a travesty to me.
I saw a heat map on.
I did see that too.
Oh, you saw that too?
Yeah.
Like the one heat map, like without Riley Nash, looks really good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of red in it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of blue in the one with him out there. But, I have a theory.
Oh.
I have a theory. Okay.
I'll put my tinfoil hat on. Got it.
I don't know what we're yelling about.
Yes, tinfoil hats are affixed. Okay, so my conspiratorial mind now thinks his presence on the power play has something to do with a dressing room calculation. Nash isn't going to say anything bad against a coach that has him on the power play for the first time since Pee Wee Hockey. He's buying his silence in the dressing room.
I'm somewhat dubious of some of your theories. I'm fully in on that one because there's absolutely no other than reverse vampires. There's literally no other explanation for why he's on.
Reverse vampires are the worst. Anyways, go on.
There's no other explanation as to why he is on the power play. I've watched a few and I get it. He's a body in front of the net, but you can see as soon as he has to circle around and he has any sort of puck handling responsibilities, it's a loss. And the play devolves and the puck goes out of the end. I did see today that they were practicing power play and he was not one of the on any of the units. So that's a good 3 weeks wasted, but hopefully we've got that.
His body language has been awesome on the power play. When he's standing in front of the net, he's like a fan. He's just kind of watching.
Yeah.
And when the puck,
he's a couple of Rory Calhoun out there.
When the puck comes near him, his whole body language is like, oh, shit. Like, I got to do something. Like, he is a complete tourist out there. It's hilarious. And I'm not saying he's a bad hockey player. I quite like him. I think he's doing a fine job overall. It's just very curious that he's out there. And I don't know what the basis would have been to experiment with that. Like,
they use, every time on the broadcast, they say it's the right-handed shot. Right, that's the Maurice only has a limited number of right-handed shots in his arsenal, and it's like I don't know what PR person from the Winnipeg Jets fed them that line, but that absolutely makes no sense. Like,
no,
it's a power play. That kind of strategy is silliness. I learned that in Mighty Mites.
Well, I mean, he could have no stick in his hand; it's not going to make a difference.
Like, at least two-hand the goalie or something. Like, do something. I've never understood it. Well, we could go on and on. What I did, when we can touch on some of these points, should we go to pre-boarding announcements?
Sure, let's do it. But I just want to end with this.
Sure.
Because I wrote this joke, and I sent it to you earlier. I want to make sure it's in. Okay? The Jets are like a chicken club sandwich. They have all the ingredients for something great, but in the end, they're just another sandwich on the Applebee's menu.
First of all, I worked at Applebee's. Don't ever eat there. Secondly, I love that all your analogies are food related and food based. Congratulations.
I'm hungry all the time.
Your consistency is astounding. Well done. All right, pre-boarding announcements. First class.
I have one seat in first class and one in coach. The price is the same because your flight was canceled.
Oh. Well, I'll take the first class.
Jerry?
What?
Why should you get the first class?
Elaine, have you ever flown first class?
No.
All right, then. See, you don't know what you're missing. I've flown first class, Elaine. I can't go back to coach. I can't. I won't.
Well, I'll start if you want.
Yeah, you give her...
I continue to be impressed by Kyle Connor. I know.
Oh,
he's
double?
The one guy.
Double down?
He's the double down? Oh, awesome. He's the one guy that I think has been generating some offense recently. Now, I think he's the one guy that can say he's been a little bit snake bitten in the sense that he's gotten some, maybe not A plus chances, but a whole bunch of B plus and maybe some A minus chances. Like, he's continued to create, like, not just, he won't disappear for a period. He's been consistent. I mean, I saw him throw a body check in Columbus. So
he did. I saw that.
You know what I mean? Like, I continue to be impressed with this guy. He's going to be on the U.S. Olympic team. Absolutely.
Oh,
I don't
for
think
sure.
he's, I think elite is too far. Superstar is too far. I think he's a star, if you know what I mean.
He's on the precipice, though.
He's on the precipice. He is. I've mentioned on our previous podcast, I've never been anti Kyle Connor. I've never been a fan. Outward. I am being won over. I am super impressed with him.
Yep.
Kyle Connor, take your pillow into first class. We got some Chardonnay waiting there for you.
A little mimosa.
And enjoy your flight.
Yeah, I agree with you. You and I were, I think, exactly aligned pre-2022 and post this first set of games. I'd always admired certain aspects of the game, but I was never a really big fan. I thought there were a lot of gaps, but he's putting a lot together and... You know, he still has, there was a rough back check last game that I think he could have caught. Like, he's one of the fast, he's just as fast as Ehlers in some games. And he could have saved a goal there, and that's going to happen. But I totally agree with you. So you're going to like this. My first class promotion goes to Nate Schultz. Now, let me preface this.
His name is Schmidt, actually.
Schmidt.
You know, I know you have trouble with these ethnic names.
It's so... The Eastern Bloc countries, man, they get me.
Yeah, Germany, real Eastern Bloc.
I just thought in my head, I'm going to edit that out. I'm not going to edit that out.
No,
I'm proud of my blundering.
You, man.
Yeah, it's what I do. Nate Schmidt, sorry. Schmidt. I know he has holes in his defensive game, and I know both he and Morrissey tend to lose more than their fair share of puck battles, but I love... This is more of a pick from my heart, not from my head. I love his game. I like him just generally as a person. But I think he's added, like, I think he leads the league in stretch passes.
Yeah.
And that was something we sorely needed from last year.
Passes. Passes. Just passes.
Period.
Short passes, long passes, it didn't matter. Anything other than high and off the glass.
Basically what Logan Stanley does.
Yeah.
We need the opposite of that. And his presence on the power play, although he doesn't have a howitzer back there, but to me, him and Pionk, I think, are the best at distributing in a way that facilitates a bit more movement, like you did, what you said, in a rapid way rather than a slow as molasses way. And I think Morrissey's play has been elevated as a result.
Yes.
Again, Morrissey has struggled at times. But he's, to my mind, night and day. He was really bad last year, so it's not all he had to go is up.
Right.
But it's definitely an arrow pointing up, and I just wanted to acknowledge that we have a true, I mean, not elite, but we have a true 1-2 punch on our first D line, and I think a lot of that has to do with Nate Schmidt's ability to move the puck and transition well on both sides, offensive and defensive.
You know, I couldn't agree more with your choice. It's an inspired choice. What do good players do? What do great players do? They make players around them better. I do think that there's you can't boil why Morrissey has played substantially better down to one thing. There's probably multiple factors involved, both on and off the ice. But I do think you can't not say that a big chunk of his improved play is as a result of playing with Nate Schmidt. Now, Nate Schmidt is a good player in and of itself. So you're getting a 2-for-1 deal there. And they're playing very well together. There's a little bit of chaos in that pair. They do go to sleep a little bit defensively at times. Mm-hmm. But they play the type of hockey that I want to see the Winnipeg Jets play. Right? That's what they do. They can move the puck. They jump up into the play. They're aggressive offensively. I like that. That's what I want to watch. That's what I want to go down with if we go down. So
agreed.
Full credit to Nate Schmidt. A good choice.
Yeah, and Nate Schultz was a good choice too. He'll just make it the next
game. He's also a good player. Yeah,
he is.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Penalty box.
You do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
I'll go.
Do you want me to? You go.
Yeah. You're gonna like this one. As much as it pains me, Nick Ehlers. You're in my penalty box.
Oh,
yeah, my boy.
Goodness.
Yeah,
you don't like fast players that shoot the puck
from all angles. It's a tad reminiscent of, and I'm not making any comparisons whatsoever. Please don't at me, but it's a little reminiscent of the Evander Kane experience in Winnipeg.
Oh.
Skate really fast down the ice, take a shot from a really bad angle, and then look up to the sky when you don't think it goes in. Like, the worst thing that I think could have happened for him is him scoring that really beautiful top-shelf goal from a terrible angle, because he's tried that about 4 or 5 times, and let me tell you, that's a 1-in-50 shot. And every time he does it, that's a stoppage in play, that's a poor scoring chance that looks like a shot on net. Do I think he's brilliant? Yes. Does he do 1 or 2 things a game that I think very few players in the NHL can do? Absolutely. But his, like, every play or every rush, it seems to me he's going for the Harlem Globetrotters pass or the Harlem Globetrotters move. And I think he just needs to slow down a tad and make some simple plays. I don't want to take any of that away from his game because, again, he's brilliant and I love him. But there's way too many missed opportunities, way too many getting cute with the puck when it's a one-on-one puck battle. Because he can get gritty, and he gets in there. It's just he's devolved a bit, I think, in the past 10 days or so into more of a trick shot artist. And we don't want him to be a trick shot artist. We want him to be one of our top forwards. And so, sorry, buddy. Penalty box it is.
Yeah, you know, as we've talked about, I think he's a tough guy to play with because that he has a particular style he needs to play, and it's hard for others to complement that style because it takes speed. Now, he hasn't had continuity in terms of line mates, and I think that that's been challenging for him. I think that for some reason, there's not a lot of chemistry between Scheifele and Ehlers, at least at this stage. And I don't like, and again, this is pure speculation, I don't like the body language between the two. They seem to play like I don't see them looking to pass to one another as much as I think they should be when they're playing together. Hopefully that can overcome with time. I'm not suggesting they don't like one another or have problems off the ice or anything like that. But I just don't know. There is, you know, the whole, and we're back to Wheeler, there's a lack. We haven't settled on an equilibrium yet in terms of who best plays with who. So I think we're feeling a bit of growing pains here because we've detached Connor from Scheifele and Wheeler. And I agree. I'd like to see different things. I think he's being told to shoot more, so he's doing what his coaches are telling him.
Yeah, fair.
Whether that's the best advice, I don't know. But I understand what you're saying, and I had hoped that he'd be more productive and more of an impact. Because if he can do that and then do that on a line that doesn't have Kyle Connor on it, and Kyle Connor, really, if we can just get those four guys going,
yeah.
Scheifele, Dubois, Connor, Ehlers, 2 and 2 on the top two lines, whatever the right configuration is, then we're cooking. So I understand where you're coming from, but I'm more optimistic, but I know what you're saying. For me, who will I put in the penalty box? I think it's too obvious to go with Paul Maurice and Wheeler. They're just, I mean, we can
go on. I was going to go Wheeler, and I was like, get him off the first line. It's like, that's well-tread.
I do have a little thing on Wheeler. I'll try to say it at one point, because I think it's at least half interesting within the context of our show. But I'm going to go with Jansen Harkins. I don't think he's been very effective with the chances that have been offered to him this year. I think he's...
But he played well last game, but you're right.
Overall, I had really strong hopes for him, not to fill the net or anything like that, but just to go out there and play like a Brandon Tanev type role. Go out there, bang a little bit. He hasn't been as effective as he had been the year previous, and I think that that's part of the reason. He hasn't looked good on the third line. He's looked a little bit better when he's been on the fourth line. You know, we've had a number of guys that quite haven't met expectations. I think he's one of them.
Bunch of guys in the lower six, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that he's the type of guy, if he can get on his game, that brings a bit of a sandpaper element into what we're trying to do that can help make space for other guys. I'm a little disappointed. I like... Harkins, I want him to succeed, but I just don't think he's been playing to his expectation, the team's expectation, and I hope that changes.
We miss Mason Appleton. I thought he would fill that role a little bit, go hard to the net, get some scoring chances, be interchangeable on the second line if need be, and he's been largely invisible. I noticed him last game. I thought he showed some of that speed that I know he has, and a little sandpaper, like you say. But to me, that's largely symptomatic of a lot of our bottom six, is that the tornado has been a little quiet. He got that one goal there, which was nice. But we haven't gotten a lot of production from our... Adam Lowry I love, and I refuse to say anything bad about him. But the rest of it has been fairly blasé. The one thing I do... This is one where you always try and improve as a human being, Vaughn. And my natural I don't know. I'm giving it a shot. I don't really usually go for that kind of shit, but I'm going to give it a go. My inclination is always like, you know, you see Perfetti and others on the Moose lighting it up. And my inclination is like, well, why don't we just bring up Perfetti? There we go. We need some scoring on the third line. But I'm resisting against that. On paper, it makes a certain degree of sense. But I think this development is good for him. And the second part of that is that... we've seen this too many times, right? Is where we bring somebody up and we have all these high expectations, and for the 8 minutes they're going to play a game, and their defensive responsibilities, doesn't translate. Scoring a bunch of goals and getting a bunch of points in the AHL doesn't equate to successful scoring on a third line in the NHL or fourth line, and so I'm just hoping that our current guys get a little more comfortable. Tornadoes look pretty good. I've seen a lot of that, right? Well, why is Perfetti sitting there when we need bottom six scoring? And I just don't think it's that easy.
I agree. I think they're doing the right thing with Perfetti. He's growing by leaps and bounds, by all accounts, in the AHL. So I think, taking it back to Harkins, I think that we just need to stick with him a little bit. I do think that when Stasny comes off of the IR, there is an opportunity. I don't see how... playing Stasny with Lowry and Wheeler is any type of affront to the captain in any way, shape, or form. I know Svechnikov only makes three quarters of $1 million, and therefore, maybe the room cares. I don't know. That's the thing. Maybe that's unacceptable in the room when a Blake Wheeler's healthy, and I don't know. To me, it's not justifiable, but maybe that's... maybe that's the reality. And speaking of Wheeler, I did want to get to this because I do think... I want to hear your opinion on this. I think we're at the point now when we've moved past Maurice is protecting Wheeler into an area where Maurice is possibly damaging the legacy of Wheeler as a Jet zone. Okay, he's simply refusing to put him in situations where he could be more effective, and instead... continuing to put him in situations and with line mates where he is clearly a drag in all three zones of the ice.
Yep.
Okay. Maybe Maurice is unable or unwilling to have that discussion with Wheeler, simply because he knows the guy. Like, I don't know Wheeler. I don't. Maybe he would throw a fit. Maybe he would punch him in the face. I don't know. But, you know, this is getting bad.
It is bad. A guy, it really is.
This is a guy who was a top 10 scoring forward
for years.
The better part of a decade.
Yeah.
In the NHL. Okay, he is our captain. He has led us to pretty good, not the pinnacle, but, you know, he's been an elite player for us for a long time. And he is putting him in a position where people are going to start revolting to get him out. And it is unbecoming. So if we're talking about the long-term legacy of Blake Wheeler, we need to start putting him in better situations. Because he gets the puck sometimes. I think he tripped over the puck last night.
He did trip over the puck last night.
He tripped over the puck.
And he fell in the net. It's embarrassing out there. It's
nice tweet, by the way.
Where he finally found the back of the net.
Finally found the back of the net. He's going to find the back of the net one way or the other. But I'm honestly serious. This is, people are going to start turning on him. It's probably, I don't know, there's no way to calculate this. You know, half the fan base is frustrated with him, and half the fan base, like my dad, is going to defend him, and nothing he can ever do is wrong. But that's going to start shifting. People, you can't fool all the people all the time, right?
No.
Pretty, like, so I don't know how many lines he needs to be on and just stop them from having success before people notice. Anyways, I love the guy. His, you know, when we talk about his play in the absolute micro short term, we might be negative against him. I'm not anti-Wheeler. Please put Wheeler in a position for him to be successful, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I started to think back, same as you, because I was getting openly frustrated watching these games, and like you, I was like, well, some of this isn't his fault. Like, he shouldn't be playing on the first line. He's just not that player anymore, and that's not his fault either. He's had a long and somewhat illustrious career, and I remember the lad in little days. Like, he's been a huge part of this organization for a long time and a very exciting player. But he's clearly not the same player. And this is where I struggle, because to me, it's a Maurice thing. Like, I've seen Maurice defend him under all circumstances. This happened last year. And Maurice was like, oh, but he's got 11 points in 10 games. And he was clearly playing terrible. He had 7 power play points at that point. Yeah. And it's like, well, yeah, he's the central part of the power play. And he deserves to be on the power play. Let's put him in a different spot where he can facilitate a bit more. But let's get him. Maybe he tries penalty killing. Put him on a third line. Give him specific roles. Anything other than what is like, you can see the play materialize, and he dumps it off, and you can see he just kind of sags his shoulders and falls back into it's like the basketball player that can't do anything but shoot threes, and he'll just fade off in the corner and hopefully somebody makes a pass to him. Like, it reaches that level of obscurity. And there's got to be a better use for him. And I can't imagine there isn't anybody in the Jets organization who hasn't tapped Paul Maurice on the shoulder and said, hey, dude, this ain't working. Like, I don't know if you're not seeing what we're seeing, but we've got a lot of Wheeler time left. Let's try and use this time wisely.
Well, just super quickly, because I think you made some great points. The Jets this year are averaging 4 minutes and 40 seconds on the power play per game. So even if Wheeler is playing all of those minutes and playing well, he's getting 20 minutes a night. So that's 16 minutes of lackluster play, right? So even when the power play was driving his quote-unquote success, it's still such a small part of the overall game.
Right, exactly.
He spent such a small part of the game on the power play. You know, it's like, you know, I'm gonna make sure our boundary corner in football is our boundary corner because he plays well on special teams, but he gives up 3 touchdowns to their starting wide receiver. You know, it doesn't work that way. I mean, the game is won and lost 5-on-5. He's not playing well 5-on-5. As we've talked about several times on this podcast, no one is suggesting he can't be on power play 1.
Right.
Nobody is saying that.
Nope.
What we are saying is perhaps he should be our third line right winger and play with people that can complement where he is in his career right now. Like a Paul Stastny, who is kind of in the same boat.
Really? Like, but it's transitioned into it well.
Exactly. And they can all play like a grinding, a cycling game, you know, that can... And then Wheeler can be the focus of that line, and I think his numbers would go up. We've talked about that before. Again, I don't want to get us too off track here.
No, I like it.
One,
I agree.
One other interesting thing to talk about before we get to last call, but let's leave it there. Blake Wheeler, we love you. Just please accept an assignment on the third line.
Well said. What I think we want to do real quick, have a bit of fun. We're going to have a new segment called In-Flight Entertainment. And tonight's in-flight entertainment are player jerseys. There's been some developments. The New Jersey Devils came up with their first third jersey in, I think, maybe franchise history. And somehow, poor Marty Brodeur got hung out to dry on these. They're sweet awful. They rolled a bunch of gutter balls on them. And I've seen on Twitter some Photoshopping. And with a little Photoshop, they could be quite nice. But they're not. They're terrible. So they took a beating. Our Canadian Olympic jerseys have taken a beating. I quite like them. I don't know what your thoughts are on them. I wanted to get your thoughts on what your favorite Jets jersey was of all time.
So super quick, New Jersey's jerseys. Well, I don't care. I don't think about the New Jersey Devils. The Canadian Olympic ones, a couple interesting things I've heard on them. The first was, well... You know, our nation's colors are red and white, and therefore the jerseys should only be red and white. While this black, it looks like a Nazi uniform.
Oh, Jesus.
I'd say yes, it does kind of look very SS-like.
Ooh.
I don't have a leg to stand on. I coach for the University of Manitoba Bison football team. Our school colors are brown and gold. Vegas gold, which is a nice gold.
It's awesome.
Kind. But our home jerseys are black. Now, we say, well, technically it's a dark chestnut brown, but they're black and gold. So we don't even use our own school colors because black is
cooler. They're cool unis.
I think they're kind of cool unis. I've also seen, I think it was Greg Wyshynski say that the Canadian
Maple Leafs
looks like a butthole.
Butthole, a turkey butthole.
Turkey butthole. I'm like, oh, that's a bit of a reach, but yeah, I guess. I mean,
a little weird. You went there right away, Greg. But good for you.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Yeah. What are you thinking about on a regular basis?
Thanksgiving,
Greg?
I mean, needs a whole different thing for you, don't it, buddy?
Yeah. A little too sexual for my liking, but yeah, I think they're okay. They're fine. You know, it's going to be awesome to see Mark Scheifele in one. So, Oh, you didn't even bite.
That was purposely silent to see what you would do.
Oh, I'm confused. Oh, I think he's on the edge. I saw online, I think Jay Fresh did a pretty big.
Oh, did he do a breakdown of whether or not?
Well, not a breakdown. I think he did. He did. What's the word I'm looking for? He did a poll, is what he did.
Oh, okay. And, so scientific then.
Yeah, Team Canada was expected to carry 14 forwards, and he finished 15th in the voting as to who
it's
should
be
tight.
The team.
It's going to be tight, for sure.
The season's not helping him.
No, it's not. But yeah, which is my favorite one? Well, to be honest, when the original ones came out, I was like, okay.
Me too.
Like, they weren't bad. They could have been anything, right? They could have been bad. But I really liked them, but I didn't love them.
Me too.
So then let's go to some of the newer ones. What's the crappy blue one called?
The light blue?
Yeah.
The Aviator.
Aviator, yes.
That is resoundingly unpopular. I like it. I know I'm in the minority. I've got one. It is like you can go to Winners and pick that up for $20.
I wanted to like it so much. I don't like it. I don't know if it's bad or anything. It's just, I don't know. The Jets don't seem to play well when they're in the powder blues. And, you know, the gray ones, again, I want
Yeah, I want to like those. Them. Yeah,
I want to like them. I don't. No, because gray is gray.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like, it's kind of antithetical. Like, let's take a chance and make the jerseys gray. Well, making anything gray isn't taking, well, it is in a way, but it's not being cutting edge, Chance. It's more being like, how dull, like, okay, here's your assignment. Create the dullest jersey in the NHL. Boom, Jets.
There you go.
With the gray ones. What do we call those? The concrete cinder block?
Yeah, I don't
there's
know.
The aviator the gabagools. Jerseys and the cinder block. The gabagools. anyway, so no, that which leaves by just by process of elimination, the heritage ones. The blue one is my favorite.
We are aligned.
Them both. I think they're absolutely gorgeous, incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times we need to see on social media people from other markets saying these are fantastic. The logo's fantastic. You should make these.
The red pants, everything.
The red pants, everything. You know, people are saying red helmets or whatever. Fine, let's do red helmets or not. I don't care.
Great, I don't care. Just get those jerseys out.
I don't. I mean, are we so conservative and entrenched in that? I mean, our owner didn't even want to call them the Jets. Now, good on him for calling them the Jets, mm-hmm. for sure. He wanted to call them the Solar Bears or Polar Bears or something like that.
Yeah, well
but,
done.
You know, he did go with Jets, so let's give him credit. But let's not be so tied to that design. I mean, it's been over a decade.
Yeah.
Or let's just do it for one season, okay? Heritage ones are going to be our everyday.
They're our main ones, yeah.
Yeah, for a particular season. And I think we play pretty good in them, too.
We do. And I go into the Jet store sometimes because there's one near my work downtown. And it's depressing because it's all just the old logos. And I look around and it's literally a minute and a half trip. It's like, I don't like any of this. And we go out of our way to make things as bland as possible. It's like the Heritage jerseys are sexy. Everyone thinks so. Yeah. Let's get on board, people.
Yeah, well, for the record, I have bought one of my sons the Aviator and another one of my son. What all he wanted for his birthday last April was the gray one, so I got him that.
Really? There you go. Now you're representing.
Yeah, yeah. Won't put them on my body, but hey, here you go, kids. Have some crap.
Here you go, Offspring.
It's on sale. Yeah. Oh, I was super smart. Like, when the... I think it was in the summer, they had, after Line A was traded, they were giving away, or they were selling like beautiful Line A jerseys for like $29. I'm like, hey, Jen, AJ, do you guys want jerseys? They're like, yep. I'm like, do you mind if they say Line A on them? They're like, nope. Because my little guy created a player on NHL, his video game. He calls him Line A.
There you go. See, that's good parenting right there. All right, should we do last call?
Let's do it.
Hey, guys, just letting you know it's last call. Almost time to wrap it up.
All right, so in last call, what we moved to last season was we kind of give a short preview of what's coming up and letting you know where we're going. So the Jets are playing tomorrow. We're recording on Thursday night.
Yeah.
So the Jets play on Black Friday at 2 p.m.
Right, okay. Right. I forgot about
in
that.
Minneapolis, that is going to be interesting.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's a little ominous for a team that's lost four in a row to be playing on Black Friday. But anyways, well, I'll tell you, Mike, my IPA eye test Friday starts early tomorrow.
Right. Good. You're bringing it back. I love it.
Yep, IPA eye tests are back. Good thing the kids don't have school because there's no way Daddy's going to be in any way, shape, or form to pick them up at 4 p.m.
You do you, bud.
I'll do me. Following the game on Friday afternoon, the Jets play the next night in Calgary, which will be a tough one. Calgary's playing super well. So that'll be a tough one. We play, like I said, tomorrow is in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Playing the Wild, who are at the top of our division. And then they have a back-to-back where they have to travel into Calgary and play Calgary, who's at the top of the Pacific division. They get a bit of a reprieve. Having to fly back home and play Arizona on the Monday.
All right,
we get the rest of the week off before playing the Devils on Friday night, December 3rd, which I'm looking forward to. Why, Mike?
On Friday,
we're
IPA?
We're going to the game.
Oh, are we doing that one?
Game. That's Friday, December 3rd. I'm back, baby. Football's
You're
over.
Back. I love it.
I think it's you, me, and Rich.
We're bringing the band.
In-person IPA eye test Friday. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be mayhem.
Yeah, bunch of middle-aged men have to go to bed at 9. It's mayhem.
Yeah, we got the Wild tomorrow. the Flames Saturday, Arizona Monday.
2-2.
Devils, the Falling for 2-2. No, I think we're going to get punched in the face for 48 straight hours.
We are going to get...
We're going to lick our wounds.
Yeah, we're going to get Jean-Claude Van Damned.
We're going to play... what's the word I'm looking for? Uninspired hockey, but beat Arizona on Monday, and then have a good game on Friday because we'll be there, and we're going to bring that extra energy into the.
I would count that one as an automatic win because there's no way they're losing when the three of us are there, based on all scientific evidence.
Put it in a long-term deposit because it's a guaranteed win.
Love it. Do you want to take us out?
Sure. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple Podcasts as well as on Spotify. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.